December 21st, 2020, and I'll do that. At 4 p.m., we have the call to order and roll call, which we just had right now by Mr. Blake. At 4:05 p.m., we're going to have a review of the agenda and minutes prior from the meeting. 4:10 p.m., we have customer service and outreach reports. At 4:15 p.m., we have the Michael Wilson Award and Rush Award. At 4:25 p.m., we have the easy topic discussion of easy pay password and web booking updates from David Schaefer. Then at 4:50 p.m., we have the Metro Access customer communication to customers during outages and/or inclement weather with Mr. Blake and other members of the Metro Access team with us AAC members. At 5:15 p.m., we have the Drive Cam Services update with Ms. Terri Ann Williams Hall. And 5:30, just a brief update about the scheduling dispatch software solicitation update by Ms. Terri Ann Williams Hall. And then at 5:35 p.m., we have public comment period. And then we promptly adjourn at 6 p.m. So we already did the roll call, review of the agenda. Are there any additions, subtractions to this fully packed agenda for December 2020 as 2020 goes? Here are the crickets. Can I get someone to move the agenda as is?
So
I
moved.
moved.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions. The motion carries to move the agenda as is. The minutes from the prior meeting in November, are there any changes, additions, subtractions to it? Hearing the crickets, do I get a motion to move the minutes as is from November of
I
2020?
moved.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
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 Nays, abstentions, the motion carries to publish the minutes as is and to be accepted. Customer service outreach reports, Ms. Anderson or whoever else.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Allison Anderson. At this time, I'd like to have Kay Clark with MTM give the public comment resolution information from our last session.
Sure. Thank you, Ms. Anderson, and good afternoon, everyone. Can everyone hear me okay? One moment. Can you hear me okay?
Yes,
Okay.
yes.
Thank you. We did have two feedback from the last meeting, and they were as follows. The initial comments surrounded a customer that reported his Smart Trip and Yellow Card were not working, which ended with him being stuck in PG County. Mr. Blake advised the customer to contact eligibility and sent him a personal email to follow up on the matter. The second customer expressed concerns regarding accountability and transparency within Metro Access. The suggestion was made that the AAC consider constructing a memo of understanding to create boundaries. The customer also offered an apology for the way he spoke previously to Mr. Blake. The apology was accepted, and Dr. Posner informed the customer that the original memo for the AAC committee expired and was controlled by the bylaws. Mr. Blake added that the level of transparency is driving frustrations. And then he said that advice from the committee are not mandates. This concludes the comments we had from the last meeting.
Thank you.
And let me just add, though, to the issue. I believe the customer was Rico, so he was a member. And I want to commend the Office of Eligibility who addressed it like less than 24 hours later. I sent them an email that night and they addressed it right away. And I have not heard any follow-up from him on that. But unfortunately, he's not here tonight to testify to that himself. So we'll see what he says next month. But I know that the Office of Eligibility did try within 24 hours to address his issue.
All right, thank you so much. And next, we're going to have the Michael Wilson Award. Is
Yes,
there a
sir.
recipient?
Again, this is Allison Anderson. At this time, I'd like to have Mr. Marlon Bates with First Transit present this month's Michael Wilson Recognition Award. Marlon? I thought I saw him
Hello,
already.
can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Sorry about that. Can I do this?
Marlon, you there? Now we can't hear you.
I'm not here. We're not hearing you, Mr. Bates. Yeah, you're going in and out. Now you're on mute.
Can someone unmute him?
I'm sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
It's someplace where I'm stable, I'm in and out, and I don't want to take from the meeting. Can I just do this a little bit towards the end, if that's acceptable?
Well, that's much better.
No, we can hear you now. Good.
He's asking if we can arrange the agenda and let him go at the end and presenting the award when he gets somewhere stable.
All right, sure.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, Ms. Rush, is there a recipient for your award this month?
No, sir.
Okay. All righty, so now we can move ahead with the next agenda topic. And that will be Mr. Schaefer. Are you ready to present, Mr. Schaefer? There you go.
Here I am. The only update I have is that the change to the web booking to the password change was moved back a couple weeks because of the messaging about the drive cam and you know, the full-time audio and video recording. So you'll be hearing more about this next month as we get that communications package in place as you recommended. So taking to heart all of your recommendations about how to communicate that and plan on following through with those.
Oh, thank you. Our customers would be much happy to know that with that piece. So do take your time. Obviously, that requires some level of change in communication. With the web booking, were you able to see the hours, the question I posed the last time where it stops, like the next day it says 1 a.m. and then it skips to 6 a.m.?
I'm sorry, I didn't look at that.
Because it used to say 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and the next day by the hour. Now it just goes up to 1 a.m. and then it skips to 6 a.m. if it's an appointment time, and 5 a.m. it's a pickup time to start with.
All right, let me look at that with the Metro Access team, and I'll get something back to you in first of January.
Okay. Not a problem.
Okay.
All righty. Next topic. Moving right along. So I guess we could go right into communication. Mr. Blake, it seems to be in the last, I can count at least 4 instances where the call center has kind of gone down with the IVR in terms of the telephone piece about 4 times in the past 6 to 8 weeks, the last 2 or 3 being within a 2 to 3 week span. So I guess we want to know, if it's possible, what's going on and how do we prepare ourselves as customers, or what is the game plan of action for the call center when these things do happen to try to communicate to customers, especially the most critical thing is when the phone goes down, the two, you know, critical functions are reservations and where's my ride, but the high priority obviously is where's my ride. Customers don't want to feel abandoned and not know how to, you know, communicate with the call center when their trip is past the window or there's some other issue going on.
And I think this is a very fair questions that you've asked and a very important topic. I'm going to chime in, but I'm going to chime in sort of at the end. We're going to start with Ms. Williams-Hall. She's going to give an update and hopefully answer a lot of the questions you've already asked. And then I'll chime in towards the end as well. So Ms. Williams-Hall, do you want to begin?
Sure, certainly. So good afternoon, everyone. Although we've built in redundancies for the Operations Control Center, obviously there are times when things will go wrong. Recently, we've had 3 separate communication incidences each resulting from unique circumstances. So I'd like to take an opportunity to walk you through those three events. Most recently, on Saturday, December 12th, at approximately 6 a.m., we experienced network and telephony service interruptions. This outage occurred because of heavy fog in the area that interrupted with the laser network transmission. While there is a hardwired backup that should have been initiated once the laser network transmission failed, that backup also failed to execute. Metro Access Management has since worked with WMATA's IT department, and that IT department has implemented procedural protocols to ensure the immediate implementation of the hardwired backup in the event the laser is ever interrupted again. The service was restored by 9:15 a.m. on Saturday morning. A few weeks before, on November 7th, as you mentioned, Mr. Somerfort, we suffered a system-wide.
Oh, just to interrupt, there was one earlier this week, where I saw an IVR message where it's down and it was only for a few hours. Are you aware of that one?
So hang on, I'm aware of everything.
Oh, okay, good. Okay.
What you're referencing was Monday, and the system never did go down. What happened on Monday, we had intermittent interruptions that lasted for about 30 seconds each. And what we did was we just put the message up there until things stabilized.
Okay, got it. Okay, perfect.
Yeah, okay. So on November 17th, we suffered a system-wide outage after pre-planned work on the telephony system rendered a failure. Unfortunately, the recovery effort for that exceeded 7 hours and rendered a total loss of our reservations day. In that particular case, we did contact customers via the robocalls. We posted messages about the service interruption and the proposed solution on the website and via e-alert. In response, we activated the backup phone number. However, that took even longer than expected. Metro Access Management, though, decided to operate the following day as same-day service as a one-time remedy. Then a few weeks before that, on October 31st, during pre-planned legacy router service, we lost network and phone capacity for a substantial period of the day. In this particular case, we were able to update the IVR with the technical difficulties message, and then we extended the reservations day to clear the call queue at the end of the booking day. Now, two of those three are directly related to planned work where the remediation strategies fail. The third and most recent event can be attributed to a failure to follow protocol, but we have addressed each one of those. Now, when the OCC goes totally down, and that does happen from time to time, this is our strategy. In times when we have telephone and network outages at the Prince George's Plaza location, our agents are transported to our backup facility at the Carmen Turner Building in Landover. This effort is an elaborate effort requiring the transport of all OCC staff to two distinct rooms at CTF via specially assigned Metro buses. As soon as can be assessed, we place an IVR message up front alerting customers to the technical difficulties and encouraging them to give us a call back. Dispatch maintains contact with the drivers and visibility with the vehicles through business continuity laptops and push-to-talk devices that they utilize during the transport over to the backup facility. The total transition under these circumstances normally takes about 90 minutes. If there's a significant interruption to service, we will extend the service day or make other appropriate service operation decisions to ensure that all requests are honored. In the future, we're going to elaborate on our recent plan to provide work from home capabilities to our reservations agents. Currently, we have 25 reservation agents that can work remotely. We're planning to extend that number to all of the dispatch and reservations agents, our supervisors and managers, in such a way that service can be offered remotely from home as a backup alternative when needed. We hope to have this implemented by the end of January or middle of February. So with that, I will take any of your questions.
Oh, that is pleasing to hear. I am going to let the other members of the AAC ask questions first before I do, actually. Do I see hands anew? I'm sure there are a few. Are there any?
I can't see the hands in new, so folks may have to speak up and then we'll try to.
All right, Denise, go ahead. I know Ms. Rush is one on the list. Go ahead, Ms. Rush.
Yes. When it happened recently, we have a number, like when you need somebody, you call 911, but when it goes out and we know it's going to take time or something, if we could have a number that they gave out, a number that you could call, or we have it on our computers or phones or something, an alternative number to speak with OCC. That's what I'm suggesting. But since you're trying to get it set up between January and February, that is good. But if we could have an alternative number, like, you know, when something goes wrong, we call 202, you know, Mr. Blake's number. But I mean, if we could call, have a number that we could call so we could communicate with someone, because if the phone lines, they went totally down and you can't communicate with anybody.
So I hear you. There's two things I'd like to share in response to that. So we wouldn't want to advertise an alternate phone number that went to one individual, because now you could potentially have hundreds of people dialing one phone number. So that wouldn't necessarily be a workable solution. However, not even you, Mr. Blake.
Okay,
it is not sustainable. However, what we would like to do, and what we do have available, is an alternative number. You may recall on the event that happened November 17th, we did eventually publicize an alternative number. And the only reason why that I cannot advertise that as a permanent solution is because we have discovered that we need an alternative number in a different area code. Because in a recent circumstance, not to bore you with the technical details, but the two numbers came from the same central office. And so when the central office is down, neither the backup nor the primary number will work. So what we have to do, and we're currently working on, that's a longer term solution. And we believe we'll have that resolved probably around the end of the first calendar quarter in 2021. So somewhere around the April timeframe, but that will give us a second number, which will either be an 1-800 number, or it will be a 202 number that will be forever advertised. And that if you dial one and you don't get us, you can call the other one and someone will be available. But that takes a little bit longer for us to work out.
I see. After you, Ms. Rush, is going to be Ansel Torres, because I got a message from Anu.
Okay, well, I guess we have to wait till then, but you could have bad weather or cut the phone lines. Anything could happen between now and February when you have it set up. But they sure will call quickly. They call me and I call somebody and the calls go around. But
and if they call me too.
Huh?
And they call me too.
Oh, yeah, I know. Well, everybody called everybody, but I guess we just have to work it out.
So let me remind you, Ms. Rush, that right now we do have 25 agents that work remotely. So as long as we don't have an interruption with that particular service, that in a lot of the cases, and not in every one of the three circumstances that I just shared with you, obviously, Saturday morning, it did continue to work this past Saturday when we had the 3-hour outage. But because of some of the technical infrastructure things I don't want to bore everybody with, it's not every circumstance where if the call center is non-operational, definitely all the phone support people can. That's the many of the circumstances. So that's why we're trying to set that up. This past Saturday, one of the main reasons why people didn't feel a lot of that was because the work from home agents were available. Now, if all of them were currently on a call and a call came in, then there was nobody else to take the call as we were trying to resolve the issue. So it wasn't 25 of them working Saturday morning. That's how many we have available. On a Saturday, it's probably 3 or 4 of them.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Mr. Torres, you may now speak.
Yes. My concern about all of this is that it all sounds sort of like groping in the dark. I believe that an organization like WMATA should have something like a backup contingency plan, which is a formal plan to deal with emergencies. Just like how you have on the trains, you have some sort of, I guess, emergency rescue plan that kicks in as soon as there's some crash or disaster at any metro station or on the metro. Do we have at Metro Access, is there a document that exists at Metro Access that is called a backup contingency plan? And if so, can that be made available to the public? Thank you.
Okay. So we do have a backup OCC plan. We have a business continuity plan. We absolutely do. I don't know if those are public facing documents. I'll defer to Mr. Blake with regard to that. And perhaps I'll repeat what I shared earlier in case it was missed. So in the event that the call center goes down, that is entire center goes down, we transition. We have two backup OCCs at the Carmen Turner facility, two. So we transition over there when that happens. We don't want to make the decision to transition over there if something happens and the center's going to be down for 30 minutes. It takes us 90 minutes to get set up. So we want to make sure there's a legitimate emergency before we pull the trigger to do that. But we absolutely have detailed business continuity plans.
So my question would be is, at the time this happens, is there a time period where it's possible in these emergency instances where the most efficient way to communicate to customers that this is going on and what to do next, is there a way that as part of that a robocall can go out? Because yes, I may see it because I go in and book a trip online, but it's not accessible to everyone versus a robocall going out to people's phone numbers on record about this issue.
Well, we absolutely could pull the trigger to do that. Don't know, again, that that's the most prudent response. Take, for example, Saturday morning when the outage started 2.5 hours before the service day. And so at that point, everything's trending that we're going to be able to start the service day at 8:30 a.m. We were only delayed by 45 minutes. If a customer called and they received the technical difficulties, please call back. Where appropriate, we extend the service day for another 45 minutes, mm-hmm. and that can still be responded. Now, at no time did we lose total sight to our vehicles on the street. Our base dispatch is still available. They're mm-hmm. watching the vehicles and in constant contact with the customers. Our customer service organization is also available. And that is a publicized number that's on the WMATA.com website. And many of our customers, if they call Metro Access and they can't get us, they absolutely call customer service as well to get through to us. So we have contingencies in place. What we are working on establishing is a real-time failover. If it doesn't go through on the site, it reverts to the agents at home. That's what we're trying to put in place now. And that is, in a lot of organizations, a tertiary backup strategy. We have our secondary strategy in place, which is CTF. So I don't want anyone to think for 1 second that we don't have that. We do. That takes time and customers will be interrupted 0 to 90 minutes before that OCC is set up.
So during, if this happens, some kind of telephonic downage, so the call center still has the ability when that pickup happens during that service day when all this is happening to contact the customer. Is that correct?
So,
like for instance, you know, our trip is going and all this is going on and the call center, you know, needs to call the customer because the driver's not able to connect to the customer. Are they still able to do that with all this going on?
So that's why we have the backup laptops that I shared with you. We have soft phones on those laptops so that outbound calls or and inbound calls can come from customers on the Where's My Ride side, and outbound calls can be made to those customers to notify them if we get, you know, can't find you from the driver. We also have base dispatch that's available. So a driver can't reach a customer, they can call base dispatch, notify them, I'm sitting outside of the home, the customer hasn't come out, and base dispatch can be activated in that same way if we need to.
Okay, that's what I needed to find out.
Go ahead. I have a follow-up question.
Go ahead.
At some point.
All right, so Mr. Torres, you're gonna continue and finish, and then Pat Sheehan, you're next.
Thank you.
Okay, so, what I heard was that, well, the customers know to call customer service when they can't get in. I don't know that a lot of people know that number or familiar with customer service. And I think a part of any backup contingency planning would include, in some part, the customer that you serve. So if you know what it is, but we don't know what it is. In order for this to work, you need both parties engaged, and at least they know their piece of what they're responsible for. So I call Metro Access. I can't get them. You know, what do I do next? Well, some people may think of calling customer service. Many people do not. And I believe that if that is the policy, then that needs to be communicated to the customer in some leaning forward backup contingency plan, because this stuff just sounds like, well, if they don't call this one, they're going to call that one. And that kind of cavalier attitude really disturbs me, actually. Thank you.
Mr. Torres, I certainly do hear what you're saying, but again, allow me to just clarify a few things. So we do not have a policy that states that if you call Metro Access, you don't get us to please call customer service. That's not our policy. That's also not what I shared a few minutes ago. What I shared was we have some customers who are pretty savvy and they know that customer service is available, though it's not available at the same hours and frequency as Metro Access, which is one of the primary reasons why we would not advertise that as a backup number to Metro Access services, because they're not available during the same hours that we are. But there are some customers who are so savvy that if they dial that number and they happen to know the other number, they will go there. There are some customers who will go out to the website and look for another number. They see WMATA customer service and they'll try that. And so we don't want to get into the business of advertising that they're our backup call center, because they absolutely are not. It's just another resource. So as I mentioned to you, we have a detailed business continuity plan. What you heard me share with you was several additional layers that we're trying to put in to further substantiate the fact that we want to minimize interruptions of service. Absolutely no organization is flawless. Everybody's going to have something to go wrong at some point. The service interruptions that we had, and the reason why I shared the detail that I did with you, they're not reflective of the technology in the call center. These are things that happened outside of the OCC. Mm-hmm. These were legacy things that the authorities were working on things. In the community, folks are doing regular service. The weather was bad one day. I mean, it was fog, and the fog interfered with a laser transmission. So those are things that, despite the best planning, you know, they are going to happen from time to time. When we find the remedy for these three, I'm sure something else is going to come up. So what we're trying to establish is a way such that when these things do happen, I have remote staff at home. It may not be enough that can carry us for the day, but that can get us through the moment while we transition to the physical backup center. And as I mentioned, that's a 90-minute process.
Okay.
I am interested in the part of the plan that includes the Metro Access customer, because right now I'm not hearing any plan, any comprehensive plan or any basic plan that says Metro Access customer, if you get stuck and you're out there and customer service has gone home and you don't have wherewithal to access a website, you know, what do you do? There's got to be some backup plan some backup contingency plan where if a customer is stuck somewhere at 10 o'clock at night and they cannot get to Metro Access through the regular channels, there's got to be some other alternative. And that's basically the point I'm making. And that's it. Thank you.
So okay. I think what I'm hearing from Mr. Torres is, correct me if I'm wrong, is there something that we can put in the revised customer guide that can give some guidance to customers when this specific type of situation happens?
You're scaring me that yes. You're thinking just alike. So no, that's good. That's just what I was about to offer, because we have to revise the customer guide even before the next printing of the customer guide for the cameras as well as for the vehicles. And I think what we're going to do is take the document, the plan, and that document is not a public facing document. What we're going to do is use that information and put a good, healthy customer information education piece in there, either in a FAQ section that we know has to be updated, at least to change the vehicle preference language, but perhaps just a section of its own. So yes, we will have that very shortly.
Thank you. Mr. Sheehan?
Thank you, Paul, appreciate it. Let's see, I'm sorry, you used an acronym that I wasn't familiar with, CTS.
I'm sorry, that's CTF, and that's the Common Terminal Facility.
I'm sorry, give me that again.
Yeah, it's a metro facility that's out in Landover.
Yeah.
Oh.
Maryland and PG.
That was going to mean, yeah. Thank you, Paul. That was actually my question, was where is that facility located? Okay.
Yeah. On that. In terms of mileage, I think it's like maybe 5 or 6 miles away, but you know, with traffic and all, that just kind of complicates things a little bit.
Understand. Got it. I was going to actually say the same thing back to the discussion, getting things down in writing to the degree that we can share them with folks, I think is a good thing. So another addition to our handbook that has been ongoing. Good. Thank you for that. Yes.
Because, you know, it's happened 4 times. I know these are not, you know, regular current things, but the fact it happened 4 times and one piece lasted more than several hours into, I guess, like you said, 7 hours. I'm like, and people are calling me. I'm like, what's going on here? I'm calling the number. It's dead. And what do we need to know in terms of these emergencies so we can be prepared?
No, completely understand. And unfortunately, believe it or not, both of those incidences were the result of planned work.
Oh, okay.
And so none of these things that have happened here recently are things that should have caught us off guard or anything like that, because they weren't in the plans. It was planned work, and then something went wrong. And when that something went wrong, we had to come up with an immediate plan. We have things in place. We want to make sure that the customers are not impacted as much as possible. That's our aim, that's our goal. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not as prudent as one might think just to make all of the outbound calls to customers who some of them may or may not even be dialing in that day. So we want to give adequate time and thought to what we're going to do before we do it.
All right, any other questions from any committee members on this topic?
Paul, this is Zenu. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, we can. Mm-hmm.
Okay, wonderful. I have joined through cell phone. So I do not see anyone else's hand up at this time for this topic.
Okay. So I guess we can close this topic. And the expectation is, one last thing. I did want to mention, when this is going on days like this, is there consideration if someone gets no-showed, to be lenient on that policy on those days these happen? If the customer can't get through, you already said, the call center can't reach the customer in another method. But if the customers, you know, they're trying to reach out to the customer and the customer can't, you know, is not able to get back to the call center in that process of, you know, getting picked up.
Sure. If that customer responds, if for somehow the system does initiate a no-show, that customer will have an opportunity to explain that. And if they call in, they give us that information, reference the date of service, we're certainly willing to take a look at those and where appropriate, make adjustments.
Okay, thank you. So next topic is, the famous one is inclement weather. I'm sure you or Mr. Blake will address. As you see, we had our little slither of weather last week, and this is a good time to give those wonderful reminders of specific services Metro Access will provide. As I heard through the RVR last week when we had that inclement weather what becomes door-to-door to curb-to-curb to remind customers what to expect for this also.
So Mr. Blake, do you want to start with that or shall I?
Well, I could begin and say, you know, what we're going to do is what we've done for years. I think what you've become accustomed to, however, in my tenure, I send out these robocalls usually to customers who have trips the following day. And I get my Barry White voice and I try to sound sophisticated on the phone. But we get a list of all the customers who have at least one trip that day that we're anticipating inclement weather. And we're advising them. Well, let's put it this way. In a case like last week where we knew we were going to run regular service the following day, we advised the customers that delays and other challenges could occur because there will be snow on the ground. In other occasions, you may have heard me call and encourage the customers to cancel your trips because of the inclement weather. And then there's a third call I can make. I made it once last year where we make the decision to cancel all trips because of the inclement weather. Now, the one day we did it, we didn't cancel all trips. We just canceled outbound trips after a certain time, meaning no trips from a person's home. So we're going to continue to use that form of communication. In some weather events, you're going to get multiple robocalls as the weather changes or adjusts throughout the day. But our first level is to allow customers, if we know we're going to run some level of service, full service or moderate service, say customers book your trips like normal, but do what you believe needs to be done to be safe. And we're going to communicate with the customer and inform them as to the status of service. And if we have to be a little stronger in language and encourage customers to cancel their trips either the night before or at some point during the day, we will make those calls as well. So you should expect robocalls to continue as part of our severe weather responses. And again, we're always going to look after the safety of the customers. However, while it's not impossible, it's highly unlikely there'll be a time where fixed route service is operating, but Metro Access is not, because I do believe we are a fixed route complementary service. So if fixed route deems that it's safe to operate, we have to make those decisions as well. Again, there could be circumstances, but that's usually not going to be the case in terms of severe weather. But communication is usually going to begin with the robocalls, the IVRs, and in some extreme cases, e-alerts.
Because what I saw on that day is, because I got the Metro alerts for Metro Bus, they reverted to a moderate snow plan. And I said, okay, they've gone to that. So what does that translate for Metro Access?
Great question. And that was asked of me in our planning. Metro Access doesn't have a moderate plan. So that's the difference between fixed route and paratransit. And that was a great question. So that's why, and I always say even to our colleagues, to our contractors, so I know they're listening. We went through this my first year here, and we had a couple of little fun conversations, let's put it that way. You listen to what Metro Access says. So when Metro Access says we're changing service, that's when you can make a decision. So we will let you know that either we just want you to be very careful, two, There's so much ice on the ground, we have to switch from door to door to curb to curb. Three, we really, really want you to cancel your trips, but we're not going to force you to cancel your trips. Four, we've made the decision that it's unsafe to travel. We're canceling all trips that day. So, yeah, bus can be moderate, meaning a bus can stay on, I'm about to call it Baltimore Street. I got to think of DC Street. A bus can stay on H Street and not turn left or right onto 5th or 6th Street if that's its route, because H Street is the main street and it's clear. So that's a moderate schedule. Metro Access, we don't have that option to not go down, you know, 5th Street to go pick that customer up. So if we're operating, we're operating.
Now, is there any way, again, in the revised customer guide, because I can hear Mr. Torres ask this question, what you just said in sort of the tiered process, can a summary of that be put in as part of sort of the expectations customers should expect during inclement weather? That's fair. At least for paratransit?
That's fair. And I'm glad we're talking about the customer. So the answer to your question is yes. And I hope you in the committee, we're going to be sharing with you going forward with the customer guide, because as you're seeing, the customer guide really is a living document.
Oh, yeah, we've been through it. We're just now looking for the next revision as you are talking about some of these things to be added. Go ahead.
Here's the piece for the Metro Access side. See, when I was director of ADAP, we created a customer guide for fixed route service. And it was nice and pretty. It looked just like the Metro Access one. And it's online and it's accessible and all the good stuff. I'm going to just say it. I know a certain member of the committee read it, so I don't want to hear it's not accessible, but we'll deal with that. And we've got it in different language and in audio. But after the first edition of the Metro Customer Guide for Fixed Route for people with seniors and disabilities, I never printed out another one. And I'm talking about when I was director. I'm not even talking about being in this role. Because I'm always changing. There's always new information. There's always things to add. So we're ready to hit the click button, if you will, on a new edition of the customer guide. We're going to be adding a lot of good information, but I want the committee to start thinking about the idea that a Metro Access customer guide might not be the best format in terms of print. When somebody needs a printed copy, we certainly can produce one and send it to them, as I've done with the Fixed Route customer guide. But I want us to start thinking that you're hearing three changes we're going to now add just from this meeting. Oops, did I lose you? Oh, no. Okay. No, three things we're going to change just from this meeting. 6 months from now, we may add something else to the customer guide based on a suggestion from a customer. And if we would have printed out the current edition, then that all automatically becomes obsolete in a lot of ways. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to put that out there. I don't want to change the subject. We are going to add it to the customer guide in terms of a quick summary of what to expect during inclement weather. But I hope you be open to the idea that we're going to bring to you, that Ms. Anderson is going to bring to you, that perhaps a mass printing and mailing of a customer guide that could become obsolete at your next Metro Access Subcommittee meeting may not be the best use of Metro resources.
Mm-hmm. Now, the question, I hog it, but do committee members have questions as it relates to inclement weather?
Chair Summerford, so far I see no hands. Can't be that we have no questions.
So my understanding, so like you did last week, you talked about the policy because of things like ice or other things. You may want to talk about the conditions which were rendered besides ice going from door to door to curb so customers understand.
Ice is the primary reason for the door-to-door. Now, the amount of inches on the ground is what could just stop service altogether. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to and we use, and I'm using ice in a generic sense, it could be just very thick snow that has not necessarily turned to ice, but if it's 4 inches, I can't ask a Metro Access driver to try to walk from the curb in the van or sedan up to a person's porch in 4 inches of snow and to be responsible for safely transporting them down to the van. So customers are gonna have to understand that heavy snow buildup, or if you're like my neighbor here, I clean my parts of the sidewalk, I clean my walkway, but fortunately today we had a lot of sunlight, so finally the ice, you know, cleared up from their sidewalk. But if you know that your home, or just generally won't happen in an apartment complex, but if you know that your home has not been treated for snow or ice, you should not expect door-to-door service. That's going to have to, we'll find a nice way to put that in a printed document. But yes, ice and snow and untreated properties are reasons why door-to-door service could be suspended, you know, for all customers or one particular customer.
Like I've known in the past, like where I live at, for instance, Southern Avenue is always plowed because it's a main street. Right. My street, sometimes being a secondary or tertiary street, is not adequately plowed on the street or treated. The property is, but not the street, for the vehicle to safely be there. I already know that, yes, I'm willing to meet the vehicle on Southern Avenue if I have to and I need to travel. But I just want customers to be aware of those, you know, nuances.
And I'm not going to put this in writing. Here's what I want to share with you. Here's what I want to share. And this is what we did back here in Baltimore. You're right. The main streets were always plowed, but MTA Mobility, we had to go down, not even side streets, just regular normal streets that after 2 or 3 days still hadn't been touched. If you know you've done all you can as a resident, as a citizen, and you need to get to dialysis, you need to get to your doctor's appointment, but a vehicle, paratransit or otherwise, can't get up and down your street, you have to call your local officials and ask them to say, hey, this is a matter of serious health conditions. This is not just me wanting to get out to go to a grocery store. I need to get to life-saving treatment, and my street hasn't been plowed, and the public transportation service is telling us they cannot get down there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, customers have to, Metro Access can't plow the streets. And so customers have to be aware, if we can't get our vehicle down the street, we can't provide you service.
Yeah, I just wanted to make that sure, because I've watched customers argue with drivers back and forth. I should be picked up here. And I'm like thinking, no, this is not a dangerous, when we were, you know, sharing rides about a couple of years ago. And I said, this is a dangerous situation for a driver. He's doing what he thinks is terms of curb. The curb is the most prudent and safe area as close by as possible to pick up the customer. So that's why I want to make sure those types of things are, you know, explained as best as possible to customers.
Right. And I think, as I said, as we update the customer guide with the language you've requested earlier, we'll find a politically correct way of trying to, you know, articulate that as well.
And the last piece, after the first day or maybe several days, I've seen in the past, as y'all made, you know, safety decisions, whether or not the next day, if it's iced over, whether or not to delay service starting from like early morning until at least when the temperature gets above freezing to whatever time. I've seen that in a few instances does. That may be also something you may, you know, it obviously is done based on the weather on a case-by-case basis, depending on, you know, what happened after the storm and how much ice builds up. So that may be something you want to explain to general customers, that service, the next service day can be altered, and do be prepared to listen for that announcement.
Yeah, we agree on that. And that can be included. Yes, it can be altered either starting late, as you just suggested, or if things don't clear up as quickly as we forecasted, ending early. But so we'll make that point as well. Yes.
All right. Any other questions from committee members? Ms. Rush, Anu, or any other person out there? Okay.
No. Nobody has their stuff. No.
Okay. So the next topic we have will be, Ms. Williams-Hawk. So about the cameras, and I'm sure there'll be comments about that from your announcement from the AAC meeting.
Yes. So last month we did introduce to everybody an enhancement in our Metro Access Drive Cam service. So I'll revisit that again. As a part of our ongoing efforts to enhance safety and security, as a reminder, beginning January 1, 2021, Metro Access will begin full in-service audio and video recording. As you're most likely aware, this is an upgrade to the existing service, as today we provide video clips that are triggered by driving actions like collisions, speeding, hard braking, or perhaps even a sudden swerve. We use these clips to identify unsafe driving behaviors, and Metro Access contractors proactively coach operators to improve their skills before collisions occur. And this feature has been the bedrock of our safety program. The new service called Live Video Streaming enhances existing benefits and improves safety. There are two cameras on each vehicle, one facing the road and one facing the inside of the cab. The system also captures audio, speed, and vehicle location. These features are being enhanced to further protect passengers, operators, and Metro from fraudulent adverse driver claims and from passenger or driver misconduct. We're in the process of upgrading our vehicles and have initiated a comprehensive customer communication plan to include web updates, IVR messages, and e-alerts, as many of you have probably already heard. Mm-hmm. While audio and video are continuously being recorded by the new camera units, unless there is an incident being recorded or being saved, those videos are overwritten after 50 hours, unless someone goes in and specifically preserves their content. Once a need for relevant video is determined, our policy requires that it will be located, downloaded only by authorized WMATA personnel. Each WMATA authorized individual has signed a non-disclosure agreement. So video clips today, was there a question?
Oh, no, not yet. Keep going.
Video clips, both today and in the future, are used strictly for the purposes of the performance of paratransit duties and the safe delivery of our service, including we use them to conduct operator training, coaching of unsafe behaviors and recognizing them when they perform safe ones. We use them for safety analysis, responding to claims, litigation, and such. The live video services will be utilized to enable MTPD's digital video evidence unit to gain situational awareness when a call for service has been initiated involving a Metro Access vehicle. It allows key Metro Access staff the ability to monitor passenger behavior when an abusive behavior incident is reportedly in progress to help assess determination of a direct threat. It will allow key MAC staff the ability to perform passenger safety checks when excessive dwell is observed or no forward movement is reported with a passenger on board. It will allow key Metro Access staff the ability to perform operator safety checks when vehicles are reported leaving the service area in the cases of a hijacking or kidnapping, or if a vehicle is otherwise out of contact for us for an extended period of time. It allows the Metro Access fleet maintenance officer the ability to check the proper camera aiming and visibility to ensure the proper maintenance action was performed following a device readjustment or when we suspect that a device has been tampered. So with regard to the live video access, only MTPD's digital video unit will have the live video access. And again, that's at initiation of some kind of criminal activity. The director of Metro Access Service and the managing director, the field operations manager, and the fleet maintenance officer. So live video access is restricted to those resources. I'll take your questions.
So my first question is, with these new cameras in place, so how far will it go in observing, if necessary, proper door-to-door policies are being observed with these new cameras in place?
So they're not there for that purpose. If there is an issue and the camera happens to capture that information, you know, if there was some incident and the capture captured it, then those designated resources have access to it. Okay. But the vehicles, we did not set the cameras up in such a way that we would utilize them to track door-to-door performance.
And to be clear, the cameras that we're talking about are facing the interior of the van. So you can't see a door from these cameras.
But can they see the steps? Like when the customers get on the van or get off the van or get onto the ramp?
So again, it depends because there's one that's facing out, facing the road, and one that's facing the interior. Mm-hmm. So it depends, but I want to be very careful with that because that's not the purpose. So if an incident occurred that required that we go and we look to see what happened, and if the vehicle happens to be facing the customer's door, it might capture it, but it really depends because it's not set up for that purpose.
But also let's just try to be clear about something. So, and if I'm wrong,
I'm just saying if a customer fell like at the steps getting onto the van, or issue happened at the ramp, will it be able to capture that for y'all to observe?
No, I didn't understand that. I thought you meant the customer steps to their home.
Oh, no. I was talking about like to the steps to the van and the ramp of the van. Will it be able to cover that?
Unlikely, because that video on the inside is focused on the inside of the
van. Okay, got it. Okay, that's helpful.
Is that where you were going, Mr. Blake?
Well, at first I thought I wanted to respond to the door-to-door piece as well, because even, I mean, under some unusual circumstance, the door is behind the van and the camera's facing, you know, the interior, but you can see the back.
Yeah.
If a customer calls and says, driver A did not provide me door-to-door service, we're not going to go and look at the video for that because that's not the purpose of the video.
Exactly. Yes, sir.
But if a customer said, I fell on the steps as I was getting up on the van steps or the ramp, would y'all be able, but you saying it depends where that camera was.
That depends. Because that's an incident and we can probably deal with that. But again, let's be clear what this is for, though. This isn't for door-to-door service. And I want, since my contractors are listening.
All right, I'll stay away from that. Let's say the incident happens at the steps or at the ramp of the van.
It's possible, but unlikely.
Okay. Because this is specifically for inside the van.
Yes, this is a customer says,
whatever,
a driver did something to me that borders on criminality. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to look at that video, you know, that's, or vice versa. Driver says, this customer thought I was Chris, so he decided to hit me. But I said, I'm not Chris Blake, don't hit me. No, but I'm saying, this is not customer care videotaping. This is incident safety precaution and follow-up if necessary.
Okay. So questions from committee members.
Chair Samaford, I see Ansel Torres. He has his hand up.
Go ahead, Mr. Torres.
Yeah. So at the last meeting when we talked about this, I expressed an interest in Metro Access having some sort of privacy policy where all of the things that you outlined here at this meeting could be detailed. Is that document or document of that type to be forthcoming when this policy goes into effect?
So yes, the information that I just shared will be updated on our website. Let me check. Allison, do you know if it's already posted?
I believe it already is, but I'm checking right now. I believe it's already on.
For the website, for the, on the website?
Yes.
Could you say the question again, please?
So whether or not we were able to update the details
about
the drive cam on the website?
Yes.
It's there, yes. So if you go to Metro, under services, and we can send a link, but just for the record and what's going to be put, go to Metro under services, because now as based on your advice and recommendation, as I've pointed out previously, we change access to Metro Access. You click on Metro Access, and it's, hold on 1 second. Then you click on Metro Access again, because that takes you right to the Metro Access page, and right there. So two clicks on Metro Access, and it says, for your safety and security, Metro Access vehicles will feature audio and video recording while carrying customers beginning January 1st, 2020. For more information, see your safety is our priority. And that's a hyperlink that takes you further down the page and gives you all the information that Ms. Williams Hall shared momentarily ago.
Okay, and another thing, correct me if I heard this wrong, but it seemed as though there are situations where if this camera footage would benefit the customer on board. Apparently there's some dividing line there, which I'm not clear about, as to when this video will be used to help the benefit of riders. So if you have an incident that took place, I'm assuming that would be a situation where the footage could be used.
Yes.
Absolutely, especially if it's
a right. Not at the door, not at the door, the door-to-door thing, but on the vehicle itself.
That is correct.
Yes.
So okay, and if a passenger's safety was jeopardized or safety was in jeopardy somehow, and there was some issue that evolved from that, it could be used to support that customer's case, I guess.
That is correct.
Okay, now, and my last question on this is, as far as the audio recording is concerned, are the passengers on bus rail, are there audio recordings of passengers on the bus and rail? So if I were to take a public bus and I was having a conversation with my friend within hearing of this, would I be recorded?
I'm not 100% certain about that. We can certainly find out. I'm inclined to say yes, but I am not 100% certain.
Okay. Well, and because my point is, you cannot be recording the conversations of disabled passengers and not recording the conversations of bus rail passengers, because that sets up another separate but equal ADA problem. So I would suggest you make sure that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed on that one. Because I tell you, if you're recording disabled passengers and you're not recording bus rail passengers, WMATA will hear about it until the cows come home. And that, I will not stand idly by and allow that to happen. So let's make sure that when you do all your recording, that it is being done throughout the system, and we as Metro Access passengers are not being persecuted by it, because that is unfair and unequal.
Okay, and that's Mr. Schaefer, did you have something to add?
Mr. Torres, yes, I can tell you I work with bus and rail on customer issues as well, and bus does have recording. And it had signs posted. There is recording in the 7,000 rail cars of both voice and audio. And in the stations, there's video but I don't know if all the older cameras can record audio at this point, but I believe some can.
Well, as long as it's happening in both places, you know, we'll accept that. But you cannot have, I would definitely want to get that verified, because that would be a clear violation. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So my next question is, I look at all the providers here at Ms. Williams Hall. So while we thank you for letting us customers know that this is going to be taking place, I'm sure the providers in some way and form are letting the drivers know that as of after January 1st, that to drivers, as they continue to be, of course, professional, that they need to remain and be so vigilantly that this is going to be occurring, if I'm correct, right?
That is correct. So we've been working on this for quite some time. The drivers have been aware for more than a year that this was coming. They were formally notified about 60 days ago that this was coming and that the start date was January 1. So the service delivery providers can certainly add anything to the conversation, but they've been officially notified, yes.
That, in other words, most of them have been professional what they say. You need to watch what comes out of your mouth and what you state to customers. That's not misinformation that comes back to haunt you. I'm just saying.
Yes, sir.
No. But did any of the providers had any input as to this? No. Okay. Any AAC members, any comments about this topic here? Oh, we're moving along good. All right, then your final piece on Ms. Williams Hall again. Any updates too? Because I think you say you may have had a tiny update about the dispatch scheduling software as you're going along with this project.
So yes, we are continuing to aggressively pursue that effort. And right now we are on track to have the solicitation publicized for responses at the end of March of 2021. So, you know, barring any unforeseen interruption, we're on track for that. We look to have an award by the end of July of 2021, just at the start of the fiscal year.
Any questions from committee members? And again, we would love to be some of us test guinea pigs with your new software.
Absolutely.
Any indeed. Shape or form. As you know me, I love to play with it, as yes. Mr. Schaefer knows.
We'll keep that in mind. You know, look to give a little bit more detail before this is advertised, perhaps in the January meeting. If one of the agendas allow time, we certainly are willing to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Paul, this is Pat.
Go ahead.
Are we able to look at the requirements that are going out in your RFP when they go out?
So once they're published, absolutely, it's available to the public. Mr. Blake, I don't know about before publishing. What are your thoughts on that?
Here's what I would say. We've taken your advice. Mm-hmm. Into strong consideration, and we will share the final document, but it's, yes, we've got to be real careful. I've been, you know, really flexible, if you will, and it's come back to bite me in some ways, but that's not really what the issue is. It's more of I'm learning about some rules and some things, and just like we said about, and I'm just going to repeat, not to start a, you know, argument or anything, but if I bring you a document and then it's in the record that you want to change A, B, or C, and I haven't vetted you for your conflicts of interest and all kinds of things, and somebody else gets the award after we've changed it, it becomes very problematic. I was very, very, very transparent and open with a third party group when it came to these sedans. And it's not in trouble from you guys, it's in trouble from my colleagues, because the way I conducted that was a bit too liberal. I need to go back to being a little more, you know, right of center, if you will, when it comes to how we handle these things. So Patrick, I would just say that please note and feel confident that we did take, and especially Ms. Williams Hall, who's really led this whole effort. I've been really hands off in a lot of ways on this one, but she's taken the recommendations and the experience, because she actually went out and rode, her and Allison Anderson and a few others rode with one of our AAC members and saw the U-turn challenge firsthand among some other problems at particular locations. So all of that feedback from the committee, individual members, both on the committee and outside of the committee, has been taken into consideration and placed into the solicitation. But since this work is now underway, it's best we let it just get to the finish line, and then we'll share the document from there.
Right, and I think that probably the subcommittee and full committee would say sharing what you can, when you can, is appropriate, and that would be good.
Yes, sir.
That we have interest in and expertise in some ways too also. Good.
Yes, sir. No, you absolutely do. And we want to lean on that expertise. And I think, I want to say I'm confident, but that's just me, but I'm very confident Terry Ann Williams Hall and her team have really taken the firsthand experience as well as the information in these meetings to heart in the building of this solicitation package.
Good. Okay.
Everything, Mr. Sheehan, and yeah, I don't use that terminology lightly, that you've shared with me in these conversations that have been captured is reflected in that statement of work. And what I'd like to do in January is to go over at a high level all the functionality that we intend to solicit and gather an additional feedback from there. That way, we're not compromising the effort. We're not giving anyone an unfair advantage. We're just sharing with you at a high level what we intend to solicit.
Okay. I think that's good. Thank you. Appreciate that. Yes.
You're welcome.
Any other questions from anyone as it relates to this topic here? Hearing the crickets. Anu, any public comments?
No, sir. Received none. I just see Ansel Chores put his hand up. And Dr.
Paul, I would like to have a public comment if you could.
Okay, so I guess okay, Phil hasn't spoken yet, so let's do Phil first and then Ansel.
Yeah.
Not really. And question for Mr. Blake, if he can give us an update on any plans that are made for the inauguration in January, and whether there has been any information relayed to senior members of WMATA about any money in the new CARES package that's about to come out for transportation.
Okay, so let me take the second one first, because I think that's the easiest. I have not received anything. Now, I'm following it as carefully as I can. I can tell you that I haven't read the entire 5,500-page bill yet, but my understanding is that there is money in there for public transit, but I don't believe it's the amount that the industry had at first requested. And any amount that comes to Metro is so formula driven, I really couldn't tell you how much it would be and what impact that would have on the overall situation going into FY22 or even the FY21 changes that are coming up in less than 2 weeks. All I can tell you, and given that this is the Metro Access Subcommittee, I can tell you and proudly state that through our efforts at being advocates on behalf of customers with disabilities and bringing about some efficiencies to the service, the Metro Access service will not be impacted the remainder of this fiscal year or next year. That's about as much as I know in terms of the budget aspect, but it's a complicated situation with the budget in terms of the CARES Act too. Again, my understanding is it's not as much as the transit industry was asking for, But there is supposedly money in there, and then that's from there, it's all formula driven.
So to follow up on Phil, we made a motion at a previous meeting that now that we had this board meeting and that is the case, it's not going to be any impact, that you would follow up at some point to put that on the IVR to reassure customers.
It's coming. I mean, let's
I'm just putting it out there. That's all.
Just
that recommendation we made.
Yeah, it's not my money and it's not my service, although I, you know, sometimes feel like somebody says I micromanage.
We just want the reassuring voice of
I'm with you.
The authority in Metro.
That, as soon as that becomes official, and I can't make that official until after the board, after the public hearings are complete.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's what we want to know. Okay.
Yes,
got it.
But I'm letting you know that at this point, we've done all we can as a team in advocating the improvements that we're trying to bring to the service, the efficiencies, so that the impact would be very minimal. Because otherwise, I mean, if you look at the proposed changes, I mean, Prince George's County, we would, I mean, we would probably have to move Conrad over to Virginia or somewhere. I'm just kidding, Conrad. I see you on here. So I'm just saying our focus in terms of access services is accessibility wherever Fixed Route is operating and maintaining the Metro Access Service area as is for at least another year. That's kind of our focus. Now to Phil's second question, yes, Metro is well underway with the region and planning for an inauguration. There's a lot of indecision in terms of the region, not Metro, as to how big is this really going to be. If this were a normal election cycle, you can anticipate this would have been a very huge inauguration, which would impact the service a little further out. Given the pandemic and the entire way President-elect Biden has been conducting his campaign, and since then, we don't anticipate him encouraging a large turnout, but we don't know that yet. However, Metro Access has done this before. I wasn't the managing director the last time, but we certainly worked with the team and we're prepared. What we're gonna do is help the committee and the public find out where are the road closures, where are the disability accessibility drop-off locations.
Yeah, because I made this point. Because I made this point at the last when this happened with Obama during the two terms, how issues arise during those specific days of inauguration, where you know I was in a vehicle where well, y'all probably already knew where all the closure areas at, but all of a sudden they said, oh, you can't come up Constitution Avenue, and the driver had to go all the way out towards Virginia to get me over back into Maryland because he couldn't cut through DC. And obviously I had to call someone in the call center to explain this is why the driver is really deviating and is being told so by police.
Okay, and we're going to be, and we appreciate you helping keep that driver out of trouble with the OCC. But we're going to be monitoring these things. And this, I think, as an example of what Ms. Williams Hall was saying in the first subject, we're going to plan it very well. And then customers who want to go to the inauguration, because people with disabilities have every right to go to that as anybody else. But there may be things out of our control that change plans slightly, and we will make the best adjustments we can.
And do also understand, well, at least initially, Mr. Biden's team has said, he's told most people to plan to stay home because I think he's lowering, don't travel to DC. We still have a pandemic going on. Please stay home. So as more information come out, please do listen and plan accordingly. But I have a feeling it's going to be, a lot of it's going to be virtual this year.
That's our understanding. But again, we're planning for large, but again, the way the president-elect has been carrying from the campaign and since then, they're encouraging people to keep this small. And we'll just see how it finally plays out in terms of the final plan.
All right. Mr. Torres, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you. I had one last question, and it's more for the general bus rail than for Metro Access. Considering what's been going on with the inauguration, are they going to do something about carrying of signs and weapons on the system? Because they're coming through Virginia, which has open carry laws, and other states that might have that. I don't know what's permitted for public safety, but I know when they've had the other demonstrations, shall we call them, in DC in previous times, whether there's going to be some way to control for weapons and large signs.
I think it's a very good question that has not come up, but I think by the time we get to the AAC meeting, I'll have a more definitive answer, if not from me directly, perhaps from the chief of police himself with respect to that particular concern.
Super, thank you.
All right, Mr. Torres, you have the floor.
Yes. In closing out my comments for this year, I have some questions and some statements about some issues that that are very much on my mind at the end of the year and will definitely be something I would be focusing on next year in terms of my public comments and my advocacy. And before I say any more, I just want folks to know who work for WMATA that I have no personal vendetta against your department, you, or anything like that. I think I appreciate the work that you folks do. I may not believe in the precise way that you get out, but I do appreciate you for doing what you do and standing up to the questions and trying to grapple with some of these issues. But anyway, on the web booking app issue that was discussed today, the issue that I brought up the last time around with David was not dealt with at all. I expressed a concern about when tabbing through the app, when I tab to my address, my departure address, it tells me, more JAWS tells me, unit. Now, I have a way to get around it and get to where I need to go to, but for someone who is not an experienced user of the system, tabbing to an address field that should say, select your address or enter your address, that's what you should expect to hear. You should not expect to hear unit. Mr. Schaefer said he would have discussed this with me. I have not heard from him on the matter. Procurement problems continue to plague us at Metro Access. I don't have to repeat the whole sedan situation, fiasco, I call it. And it's every time I hear procurement of Metro Access, I cringe because I know the disabled is going to be disadvantaged in some way. We were disadvantaged with the sedan. We were put at a disadvantage with the last batch of buses that were purchased, the buses before that, and the buses before that. There was always something that was wrong with the vehicles. And so when I hear that there are new procurements that are going to be put out and Metro Access staff is sort of dancing around the issue as to, well, I don't know how much we're going to let you know. We will see what we can do, almost as though making it sound as though they're going to be doing us some sort of favor. You're not doing us a favor. You're being accountable. And if the folks at WMATA, the procurement, whomever it is, who don't like the fact that we're asking these questions, then maybe they have something to hide, because sunlight is the best disinfectant. And there's a lot to be disinfected at Metro Access and WMATA when it comes to procurement. The bylaws for the AAC clearly need to be updated. I appreciate the presenter this afternoon in talking about the issue I brought up regarding the memorandum of understanding and the fact that we have bylaws that supposedly replace that. But the bylaws have not been touched in God knows how many years. And I don't even, I would love to take a poll to find out how many people on the AAC actually know where the bylaws are and have actually read them. That is to our disadvantage if we have bylaws that are supposed to be governing how these things are supposed to be conducted and nobody knows what they are and nobody is updating them. We are losing out when that happens. When I say we in the disabled community, we the writers of Metro Access. The 508 standard for at Metro Access is clearly lacking. It appears to be a sort of a seat of the pants 508 standard. Well, you give it to one blind guy and if he can read it, then that must mean it's accessible. That's not a standard. The blind, you know, give it to the blind guy is not a standard for 508. There are very specific requirements that must be met by 508 and WCAG 2.0. Those are the standards that Metro Access needs to meet, not the give it to the blind guy standard. And if he can read it, then all blind people, all disabled people should be able to read it. We need standards, and that is killing us. It is killing us. And that, I hope, can be arrested and dealt with next year. And then the final one I want to get an understanding of is I need to get a better understanding of what ADEP actually does because it's very unclear to me. It seems as though it has a very prominent role at Metro Access, but I don't hear from ADEP very much. I don't hear reports of what ADEP is doing. I hear from Ms. Anderson, and I hear from Ms. Hall all the time, but I don't hear from Ms. Lopez, and I believe that's her department. Is there some reason why we don't hear from ADEP and we don't hear about the activity at ADAP? Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay, can I take a couple of those? I mean, I think they're very fair points, and we've got some time. I just want to take a couple of them, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Let's start with ADEP, because that's where I came from, and I was very proud of my work there. Now, one thing I can say, Mr. Torres, you want to hear more from Carol Lopez, you should attend more bus and rail subcommittee meetings, because she's talking in those meetings all the time. I mean, we do have, she has a role with Metro Access, but again, her role is as the agency's eyes and ears of ADA compliance overall. When I was the ADEP director, I hardly ever talked at the Metro Access subcommittee meeting. In fact, I was roaming around a lot of times. Sometimes Mr. Kent would have to tell me, will you come and sit down next to me, please? I'm roaming around, listening to the meeting, I'm testing. Back then it was, I can't remember the app now that everybody loved that they made me take away. Then I was out testing the Microsoft Skype. So I was always roaming around these Metro Access subcommittee meetings. Only time I really started talking is when I brought in the Abilities Ride, the Abilities Ride and the CAPS and talking about those. So generally speaking, you have Ms. Williams Hall here, you have Ms. Anderson.
And the lovely staff from Metro Access as
right.
Mr. Breaks brings them in.
We used to have half the Metro Access staff come to these meetings.
And I loved it too. Oh, sorry.
I know you did, but you know, I'm a businessman, so I got to make certain decisions here. But I saw that email, and I'm not ignoring your emails, don't get me wrong, but I saw that request to hear from Ms. Lopez more, and believe me, nobody has leaned on one particular employee probably in their career than I have on Carol Lopez in my time here at Metro. So I don't know if you're being facetious to tell Chris Blake to shut up so we could hear Carol more, or you really respect her work, which I hope it is the latter. But if you want to hear from her more, please attend more of the Bus and Rail subcommittee meetings, and you will hear a lot more from Carol Lopez.
Well, can I get a clarification?
Let me just finish it, man, because I don't want to debate. It's not a debate. I just want to throw out a few things.
No, I'm just asking for a clarification of what you're saying, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It's a point of clarification. I have nothing to add. I just want to get some clarification of what you're saying.
Yes, sir.
You're saying, if I want to hear Ms. Lopez more, then I need to attend Bus Rail, which implies that ADAP has nothing to do with Metro Access.
No, I didn't say that. See, you totally missed
what I'm saying. Well, I'm just saying you say that. I said it implies that.
It doesn't imply that.
It implies that if...
Go ahead.
No, it implies that because it's saying, well, you know, she's not going to talk at Metro Access because most of her business, the things that she does not really impact Metro Access.
No,
so AAC, the AAC meetings are cover both, and I don't hear much there either. So I just need to get an understanding of what ADAP is actually doing.
The Office of ADA Policy and Planning is responsible for ensuring that Metro is in compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, as well as all other local and jurisdictional accessibility standards and guidelines. Again, the Metro Access meeting is much less about policy than it is about operations. You're asking about our door-to-door policy, cameras on. Her work with Metro Access is usually done on the front end, making sure that the Toyota Camry hybrids we bought, that you really can fit in them and be comfortable. Making sure that the vans meet the standards, even if some don't necessarily like the van. This is much more of an operational meeting, whereas Bus and Rail is also an operational meeting, and it's operational on the fixed route side. So you hear a lot more from her because she has staff that's working on the fixed route side. And the AAC meetings themselves, I didn't talk much in those either. There was the leadership talking because those were more policy meetings. So again, I appreciate that you want to hear her. Someday, how about just give her a call and pick her brain? She's a very, very intelligent, wonderful person. I know I wouldn't be here for 8 years if it wasn't for the great work I can rely on her when I was the director of the ADA office and she was reporting to me. Now, let's jump back to procurement. Because I'm going to tell y'all again, I've got to sometimes get my Baltimore hat off. And when I usually talk about Baltimore, that's usually meaning I'm getting mean and ready to fight and all this kind of stuff. But no, the other part of Baltimore is where we can be very relaxed and flexible and open sometimes. Going into this year, for example, well, you're going to think the calendar year, but I'm going to talk in terms of fiscal year. After June, we're not only going to getting some new vans, the vans that the AAC members already advised us on and we built a solicitation. We're going to be buying 50 more sedans in the new calendar year, but it'll be in the new fiscal year. We're also going to be adding to our Metro Access fleet something called minivans, wheelchair accessible minivans. I don't want to get into all the details right now. You'll get feedback. But the way I went about being very open, transparent, and inviting was not the way this should be done. And again, I hear what you're saying that, hey, it's you want to know everything. Well, that's great. And that's where we have a policy called public access to records policy, and you can deal with our lawyers on that. We're going back to the role of the AAC. You give us advice, then we're going to build the solicitations. Once the solicitation is made public, you can discuss further and watch the project evolve. But me bringing certain types of vehicles and getting into discussions, which almost sounds like negotiations, and I shouldn't have done that. And then what it did, though, more so than the procurement process, it created a level of expectations upon many of you that you shouldn't have had those expectations. And we're not going to go down that road going into the next year. Those days are done. We had a good time. I think we still got a great vehicle. I got a lot of feedback from you. But your role as the AAC and members of the public, your role is to give us advice. And whether we're smart like Carol Lopez is or we're hard-headed and stubborn like I am, we'll either listen to your advice and follow it to the T. We may listen to some of it and may follow it, may not. But then we discuss, and if something goes wrong, that's where you can tell me, I told you so, and you can go to the board and say, we told them and they didn't listen. But the days of come one, come all, and let's sit down and sort of look like we're writing this together, those days are done. I'm letting you know now. And if that's going to be a debate among some, you can debate among yourselves and we'll listen, and this is your meeting, but... yeah, those days are done. So you're going to hear from me, for example, when we roll out the minivans. We're going to get your feedback. We're going to tell you what we're looking for, what we're trying to accomplish. You're going to give us some information. We'll take your information. We're going to put it into solicitation, but we're not going to talk about makes, models, sitting in the vehicle. Those days are done. I'm just going to be transparent and frank with you about that. When it comes to 508 compliance, we're with you, and I have a solicitation. It's not mine, so I'm not running it, but I basically wrote it with David Schaefer, and we're going to bring in a team that's going to be brought before the AAC, so you guys are going to have a chance to have a discussion with this team that's going to come here and really do a great assessment as well as some fixing. So we're underway on that, and that part is underway. Again, I didn't even come to you with the solicitation. In this case, well, it's not mine, but in this case, we're just moving forward. We've gotten a lot of feedback from you, Ansel, as Mr. Torres, as well as many others on the committee. And you're right, in one respect, is that it's not one person, but yes, I would write Ms. Rush, I would write David. We would reach out to various members of the AAC and other people in the disability community to get a broad sense of the accessibility of a particular document. But we're gonna now have a third party independent analysis of all of these efforts. And again, the AAC is gonna have a tremendous amount of feedback, or at least the opportunity to provide a lot of feedback in that regard. You didn't have feedback necessarily in the solicitation package, but you're gonna have a lot of opportunity to have feedback in the outcome and the product output. So I'm with you on, and I know I didn't touch on everything. I don't want to take up all the time, but my point is I heard a couple of important ones that you have raised repeatedly. So I wanted to just address them. I think 2021 is going to be a great year. We'll see. But I just want us to know that, hey, one thing you never hear from me, and I've said it before, I've said it privately, I've said it publicly, you guys advocate, and I'll never stand in your way. I'll never try to have those sidebar meetings up in my office or virtually and try to talk you off a ledge. Dr. Posner went right to the board and said, hey, board and OIG, I think you need to look at this. And I respect that. Questions have come to me, and I'm answering the questions, and we're dealing with it. I'm never going to say you shouldn't advocate and be as strong as you want in terms of your advocacy. But I'm also going to, I say it all the time, and I know the late Carolyn Bellamy didn't like when I used to say this, but I have to say it again. I'm a businessman. I'm running Metro Access as an efficient, accessible, safe, but again, very efficient business. And I'm going to make the business decisions, but with the input of the community, because I respect each and every one of your opinions, even if I don't always act immediately on them. So your role is to advocate this year, and I know you're not going to be alone in being strong. I know Phil.
Oh, Paul, Mr. Blake, we still have to do Michael Wilson Award, so we need to cut your final word short.
You have
short.
To cut my speech short, okay.
Yes, I almost state, forgot. Someone sent me a text.
My State of the Metro Access Union speech has been cut short. So Mr. Bates, are you there?
Yes, let's go on with the Michael Wilson Award to end this with. Thank you.
Bates?
Can you hear me now?
Oh, there you go. Yes, sir.
Okay, then. First of all, thank you, everyone, for allowing me to, change the agenda schedule around a little bit.
No problem.
I'm very happy to talk to you all about the recipient of this month's Michael Wilson Award. Her name is Monique Brown. And Monique, she couldn't be with us on the call. We wanted her, try to get her on, but she couldn't. She's been with First Transit since 2013. She's just a stellar employee. And she's, over her tenure with us, she's received several commendations recognizing her commitment to the job. During her tenure with us, she adheres to our very strict safety regulations. She works with the maintenance department to ensure sharp efficiencies in what they do. She's a powerful force. She's got a dynamic personality, cheerful disposition, and tireless energy. Outside of work, she's the mother of three wonderful children. She has two beautiful young ladies and just recently had a very adorable, energetic son added to her fold. In her free time, she loves to spend her time with her children, and she's also really into cooking. She said she loves cooking delicious meals. I think we all can enjoy those. And she's also an avid baker. Now, one of the things I want to say, that aside, that's in and of itself makes her a worthy recipient of this award, but she's also a hero. On August the 25th, right outside of our facility, as she was just coming to work, being dropped off at work, there was a fatal accident where a motorcycle came in contact, struck a woman, a pedestrian, who was crossing over Central Avenue. She immediately jumped out of her vehicle. And once she saw what was going on, and now mind you, this is 9 o'clock at night, it's dark out. She stood in the middle of the street over top of the woman who was hit to make sure that no one else struck the pedestrian. She stood there, held her hand out, and just willed the other traffic to stop so that the pedestrian wasn't hit a second time. She did this with no concern for her own physical and personal safety. When we saw the video, because it was right in front of our building, we had the video of it, I was in awe of how just, she didn't know that woman. She had no idea who that person was, but she did not want to see that woman hit a second time in the street. Unfortunately, the first vehicle that hit the pedestrian killed her, but she this didn't stop her from running out there and stopping all other traffic. So she's a worthy recipient of this award. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to tell you about Ms. Brown. She's a wonderful person, and she's very deserving of this award. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. No other questions for that. Can I take a motion for adjournment?
Well, I can't finish talking. I'm just kidding.
Do I take a any seconds for adjournment?
Second.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
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 All right. Ayes have it.
Happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy New Year. Everybody stay safe and well and have a good, safe trip home.
Thank you. Ditto to all of
thank
that.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
See
you next year. And stay safe. Yeah, happy holidays. Wear your mask. Hey. How you doing? Okay, I called
her. Okay, Darnice, I sent you a DM. You didn't answer.
You did. I'm still learning how to do this.
Oh,
I'll take care.
How are you?
Yeah.
Oh, you sent me a message, so I'll send you one back.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
You may have to text it. I think they're going to close out.
I text. Oh, you sent it on that.
I sent it on this thing.
On my phone?
No, on the Zoom. Under chat, under more, and then it says chat.
Oh, I'm looking at the participant screen.
Yeah, it says chat and all that. It just said, hi, hope all is well. That's it.
It is. I'll call you up and give you an update.
Okay, cool. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye, everybody. Thank you, Anu, for keeping it open.
Happy holidays, Anu.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Be safe and healthy.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.